This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
With Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
And thank you to our special sponsors, Iris Software, iris.co.uk. Martin, you saw a great video just recently from Iris, didn't you?
Yeah, what I think people don't understand about Iris is they were ahead of the game for MTD Phase 1 because they were the first software vendor to be listed as approved by the HMRC for MTD filing. And guess what? They're fully prepared for the next. So they've got an MTD webinar on demand that you can catch up with at any time. Rob, where did they go to see this?
It's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. That stands for Making Tax Digital for our international listeners. And there's some great stuff there that you need to know to guide you through the whole Making Tax Digital initiative. So iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. Right, Martin?
That's right. So wherever you are in your journey, at Iris know that they have the knowledge and tools to help you in the next steps. That's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar.
It's the Accounting Influencers Podcast. Welcome to our 20,000 unique listeners all over the world and to you, our new listeners. And in this week's show, Iris Software's play for global domination in accounting with the acquisition of the US-based Accountants World, a long-term provider of accounting and payroll software and cloud-based services to accountants. What does it mean for the fintech space? Then we talk negotiation and pricing tips for accountants with Malcolm Smith. He's got a background in science and marketing, speaks internationally on the topic, and he'll share how accountants can stop becoming commoditized with what they offer and how CPA firms can expand their core offerings into advisory and consulting services. In our practical Here's What Works section, Martin Bissett has more advice for accountants and CPAs on making clients switch firms. So if you have target clients who currently engage your competition, you really need to hear this. And then we talk to Alison Ball about client experience 2.0 for accounting firms. Alison was formerly on the Global Influencer Strategy team at Intuit. She now heads up marketing at Lysio, and she shares with us why client expectations have soared over recent years and offers critical steps that practices can take to upgrade their client experience with their mindset and their processes. So that's this week's show. And then one more thing, remember to check out Saturday's bonus episode, which continues with our popular series From the Client's Perspective of Why They Didn't Buy. And Martin Bissett has some great stuff with you on the common complaint that you accountants feel your prospect didn't really need your services enough to come over to you. So pin your ears back and enjoy the show. And remember, you can catch all of these segments as standalone episodes throughout the week. So here we go, and we start with the news.
The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
Cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights and wisdom
from the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world. The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
So now we come to the news, and we look this week at an article from Accounting Today, which reports, and at the time of recording this is less than 24 hours old, that Iris Software acquires Accountants World. The opening paragraph says, Iris Software, a UK-based provider of accounting software, has acquired Accountants World, a long-time provider of accounting and payroll software and cloud-based services to accountants based in New York. Now, this news item, while applicable to everybody everywhere who listens to this podcast, is specifically for our North American audience, because over here in the UK, we're very aware of Iris. Iris is very prevalent, has been for a lot of years, has a huge subscriber base, is in not only the accounting vertical, but also the HR and education sectors as well. And they need no introduction to us over here. But I know from speaking to a lot of firms and a lot of influencers in North America that you guys haven't heard of Iris. But it's been expanding its foothold in North America for a long time now. Its brands include Star Payroll and Practice Management, which you may well know, InnoVision, Practice Engine, Docket, Center, PSI Payroll, Conarc. I'm sure you will have heard a number of these names and not realize that they are Iris brands. Now they acquire Accountants World, which has been a pioneer in the cloud-based accounting technology space. It was co-founded, I think, in 1984 as MicroVision Software, I believe it was, by Dr. Chandra Bhansali and his wife Sharada. And I think this was Sharada discovered an error on their tax return. And like all these stories go, they decided to make sure that didn't happen again by writing their own tax software. And it grew and grew and grew. But that's, you know, 84. This has been a lifetime's or career's work for these guys. And so congratulations to them, first of all, for developing something that is attractive to a buyer. But for accounting firm owners, partners, rising stars, listeners there in North America, we thank you for listening to our podcast. And in this new section, we want to let you know about this acquisition because Iris is becoming a big deal over there. And we encourage you guys to become familiar with them. They, for full disclosure, also happen to be a partner and sponsor of this podcast. But that's not the reason. The reason is because they are now taking their North American strategy very, very seriously indeed and are well on the way to becoming a major player and therefore major influencer in how your practice runs and what your practice runs on and so on. So put it on the radar, guys. Iris, who are backed by HG Capital, are expanding their foothold in North America. They have acquired what I imagine will be a very well-known name for you guys in accountants world. And this now gives them a full suite of practice management, workflow, CRM, payroll, bookkeeping opportunities, and of course tax as well in North America. So I read that so many of you are so unhappy with the existing software that you use, here's another alternative coming into your marketplace. The takeaway from this is maybe two things from this news item. Number one, I've already mentioned, is that you've got a new player in town over there in North America. But secondly, Accountants World was so innovative in 1984. I mean, what's that? 30-odd years? And it was the innovation that they made 30-odd years ago that has paid off now. You know, they came up with software 30-odd years ago, despite not being in the software game. Now, what about your firms? What are you offering next year that wasn't available to buy from you this year? What are you bringing in terms of value to your organization that's going to increase your profitability next year? I won't go too far into that because we're off into a here's what works type scenario here. But in terms of the news, watch out for Iris making a big splash on North American shores in 2022.
Improve your practice while decreasing how hard you work to make your firm really fly.
Really fly. The Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today Mr. Malcolm Smith. Good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for having me this afternoon.
Great to have you with us, Malcolm. Just for the benefit of people that may not have come across you, would you just give us a bit of a flavour of your background and your areas of expertise?
I was a research chemist originally, then I became technical director for a big packaging company, then I was marketing director in Silicon Chips, then I was MD, divisional MD, CEO. My last job was about 22 years ago, CEO of Dow in Europe. Since then, I still do lots of non-exec, as non-exec chairman, non-exec director of six or seven companies at the moment. And I've done training and leadership programs at business schools for companies and shows like this with you, Rob.
Yeah. In terms of professional services, and particularly the accounting market that we work in, are they any different to any other sectors you work with, or are they all in the same boat, Malcolm?
I've worked with a lot of accountancy firms, and I've worked with similar sectors. And the interesting thing about accountancy is it's very commoditized. There's lots of other service industries which tend to commoditize themselves because the general public, the layperson, thinks they can look it up in yellow pages and get the same service from everybody. And the other feature is they tend to charge in hours, which really annoys me.
The joys of the billable hour.
I know. Internally, we might like to do it because we want to know how our professionals and how our partners are getting in business and how the hours are being passed out. I get that. But if you're charging me hours, I think I'm buying hours.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. I'm not buying a brilliant service, tax service, VAT service, payroll service, accountancy service, or whatever. I'm buying a service when I want a price for you doing a brilliant job and going the extra mile for me. I don't want to be paying hours.
Yeah.
It's common with lawyers as well. It's very typical, very similar.
Yeah. If we look at the word commoditized, is the world becoming more commoditized, Malcolm, across all industries? As we have automation and technology and it's driving down the price of lots of compliance type stuff.
The world is becoming more commoditized. One of the primary reasons is information travels so much faster. So Everybody becomes an expert, don't they? The whole point about our value add is we have a certain expertise or certain qualifications, which you don't have. So I can help you if you pay me for them. But now, of course, everybody, and even when we go to our doctor, who used to be the expert, you bow down to people in white coats that use it. But now we look it up on Wikipedia, don't we? We go into a GP surgeon, you say, this is what I've got, and this is what you need to prescribe.
Yeah.
And they've never heard of it because they did med school 30 years ago. Even the experts have ceased to become experts in a sense.
Yeah, and the balance of power has shifted to the buyer who has all of this knowledge at their fingertips. So that certainly commoditizes things. And particularly so in the accounting profession, I mentioned the word compliance. A lot of what they do now is done in an automated way at the push of a button, even on the legal side of things. So it's affecting them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you have to be very careful in an accountancy practice, because it can be all just an algorithm and all just compliance and all just tick boxes.
Yeah.
And I think probably as a layperson, I could probably do that myself with Xero or with another accountancy package. I can just get an accountancy package. I can look at all that. It's all automated. So what are you going to do that's different for me? So you've got to get your mind around that and think, actually, we do all that. And that's a necessary part of the job. We do it right, and we are qualified to do it right. But actually, we add so much more value for you, the client. We really listen. We're really empathetic. We really go the extra mile. We really try and get involved in your business or your personal life and really work out the really best ways for you going forward.
And what are the downsides of being in a commodity market, Malcolm?
The downsides are you talk about price very early, and it becomes very much about price. It's price driven, and suddenly you're in this game where it's the lowest price sort of wins, because everything apparently is apples compared with apples compared with apples, and I can get it from anywhere apparently. So that's the issue, is you've got probably you're running a practice with better people than the norm. You're investing in those people, you're developing them, you've got lovely offices, yeah. And suddenly I'm being matched with a person who's working from a garden shed and I can't charge for it. So we have to make our minds up, don't we? Because you can work a commodity. EasyJet is a commodity and it works because you know what you're getting, you pay the price. It's beautifully AI'd, it's lovely website, it's a lovely app on the phone. It works, but there's no frills. And if you want to be there, that's fine. We have real people doing really intelligent stuff. And therefore, you've got to think about what are the added value things we bring to the party, despite all that commoditized stuff.
Yeah.
Part of the problem, Rob, is we're accountants. We go in every day from 9 till 5, and our work becomes prosaic or mundane. We think it's easy. We think it's easy to do accountancy because we're qualified in it. We've done it every day. So it's easy. So in our own heads, we sort of commoditize it. I do public speaking for my career, and people think, well, that's amazing. But to me, it's easy. And I can't lose sight that to you, it looks very, very valuable. But to me, it's just every day I can do it very easily.
And you're talking about proximity bias there. You get so close to the brilliant stuff that you do that you feel it's quite mundane.
And you never celebrate it and you never recognize it. And people stop saying thank you. And we stop having meetings with your sunshine meeting, which celebrate the fact we have value. We stop listening to clients say, great job. Thank you very much. Because it's every day. So you're right. Absolutely.
So here's a paradox that I've got in my head as a result of something you've said. If the power is in the buyer's hands now with all the knowledge that they have, you think they would be able to discern between a good accounting firm and a bad one, or a good one and a better one. But actually, they commoditize them all in that despite their knowledge, they think an accounting firm is an accounting firm is an accounting firm, the same as a bank is a bank is a bank.
Yeah.
And they put them all in one box, and it's difficult for them to discern the difference, isn't it?
It is. In some professions, the buyer doesn't even care whether you're better or worse, because he knows you have to be compliant and he knows that he can sue you if you get it wrong. The problem with that commoditized buyer is if it's not a pure commodity like a drawing pin, they're going to miss out on a whole pile of value adds which they could have got had they thought about it and invested. Because it's not about price, Rob, is it? It's about added value.
So you've talked about when you are perceived as a commodity, it becomes about price. It also, as a firm, must be hard to attract talent if you look and sound the same as all the other accounting firms. It's hard to attract new clients. It's hard to put out a value proposition. Are they, in summary, the downsides of being in a commodity market?
Yeah, they are. You can successfully run an accountancy firm as a commodity as long as you understand what you're doing and don't start to let your margins leak away by over-servicing. People get you fixed on a price and then they ring you on a Saturday morning and say, "Ooh, hi Rob, could you just do this?" And now they're a client and you're client-centric and you say, of course we can. You think, hang on a minute, that's not now being paid for.
Yeah. And when you're in that position where you want to create margin, as you talked about, there's very little margin in compliance work. So professional services firms, they talk about advisory now. That's where the added value is.
Yeah, you've got to start to expand your service range to include advisory, consultative services. And you have to think of all the add-ons you could possibly do, which are not necessarily directly into accountancy, but they're sort of in the same framework. You know, I talk to a lot of recruitment firms now who do psychological profiling as an add-on, because a recruitment firm is a recruitment firm is a recruitment firm. if you get these extra add-ons of we interview twice and we profile people and we look at your value systems and we look at your competency set within your business and we match it to the profile of the candidate, you think, my God, this is so different. It's not just hiring a bum on a seat. And that's what we've got to do in accountants things. And of course, the law's changing all the time. My accountants, they send me stuff all the time. This is what changed yesterday. This is what you need to do tomorrow. This is what you need to do on furlough tomorrow. This is what you can do now. We've done this. And you think, this is all proactive brilliance. And even if I wanted to go anywhere else, I wouldn't, because they're giving me so much stuff for free now. And for the listeners, what you've got to do is go into your business as a team and start working out, why do people really at the end choose us? And I think it's a question worth asking. I know the best way to find your value add is to ask people why they chose you. So let's say you're down to a shortlist of five and you ask them a month ago, 5 months ago, half a year ago, you had a shortlist of three accounts practices you could have chosen and you eventually chose us ABC accounts in Manchester. Why was it? And you'll be amazed about the response. They might say, because that lady on the telephone who we rang, she rang us back every time she said she was going to do it. She had the right information to hand every time. You did exactly what you said you were going to do on the tin every single time. And that was just amazing. And you think, well, that's an insight I never thought we had. I thought our reports were presented brilliantly well, but it wasn't. And then if you Pareto that, the reason why people choose us is because we listen, or because we've got this add-on service, or because we're empathetic, or because we're a little bit innovative about what we do. We don't do it. How many people listening now would say to their clients, why did you choose us a month ago? Because they're in the bag. We don't think to do it.
But what would a professional services firm do with some of those answers? They deal with certainty, they deal with data, but often the answers to why did you choose us come down to intangible things like chemistry or I just liked you more. How do you deal with that as a value proposition?
But then you can drill down, Rob. You can say, well, why do you like us more? And you can say, well, every time somebody said they would ring us back, they rang us back all the time, every time.
Right.
And then when you Pareto that and say, one of the big reasons people deal with this is because we do what we say we're going to do. So we've got to start recruiting to that attribute. If somebody turns up late for an interview, we won't take them on, because that's a massive attribute that our clients are recognizing. So you can start to get real mechanisms to make your business structured to what the client likes and appreciates. If you sound like you listen a lot and are empathetic a lot, you can train that into your workflow. So you can train listening skills, acknowledge, repeat back to make sure you've got it all clear. All those skills can be trained.
But isn't part of the problem, Malcolm, with differentiation that all firms claim the same thing? We're a listening firm. We're client-centric. We're full service. And
they're not. They say it. They might say it. They might have read it somewhere else. But you can still discern between people who say they are and real excellence in that marketplace.
Yeah. So we don't want to be a commodity. We know we need a value-added proposition. How do we then go about pricing that?
So you need some value adds. You can glean what the clients say to you about why they chose you one way. And the other way is to start to try and think internally, what are the value adds we've got which are different? So we need to differentiate between what I call licenses to trade, those things that you have which allow you to run an accountancy practice. And they're the things you have in common with competition. And this is the big thing we don't get discerned in our mind. What do we have that's in common with competition that allows me to do what I do? So we need to think not just what the clients tell us, but what do we think we've got which makes us added value? And then when you get that added value model, there are three so-called value disciplines. One is innovation, one is operational excellence. But the one which we're alluding to now is customer intimacy. So most of our values would be aligned to really listening to customers and giving customers exactly what they want every time. Now, that's expensive. You can't start cutting costs with that, because you can't cut to no frills when you're high value add. So if you're investing in really nice offices and really nice client reception areas and really great add-on services, you've got to start charging the right price. And the way to set price is to think to yourselves, well, what's our limit? What's our bottom line for doing that piece of work with that sort of client? What wouldn't we do it for? Now, the big thing here is people start trying to work this number out like it's a minimum margin or a minimum added value or a minimum contribution percentage, but it isn't. It's really just psychological. It's what's the point beneath which we just wouldn't do that work?
Yeah.
Because the biggest cost in an accounting firm is wages and salaries. It's 70, 75%. So you've got to think, well, as long as we cover our costs, we could do any work. That's true. But you've got to be comfortable walking away. You've got to be comfortable with the point where you think, we just sit here and do no work rather than do it for that. You've got to pitch that limit at each type of intervention, whether it's SACS, whether it's audit, whether it's accounting. It doesn't matter. You just have to pitch that limit.
Yeah.
Then you take a normal data point. So you take a data point, which is, well, normally for that sort of client with that sort of piece of work, taking that sort of time, we would charge something like £3,500. So maybe your limit's £2,500. You could get £3,500. But that's where poor negotiators sort of stop. They pitch with what the client's expecting to hear. And actually, we're talking about exceptional businesses who we're addressing today, Rob. And therefore, you've got to go one step further and think, well, what's possible? Without profiteering, without being immoral or without being unethical, what did we charge once, which was exceptional for that type of work? Well, maybe that's £4,000. Yeah. And only then can you set what your opening position is, which is the price. So we should always quote £4,170.
We're venturing into negotiation now, which is really what I wanted to get you on. We can't avoid the times that we're in, Malcolm. How has the COVID pandemic changed, given that we're now in a virtual world and we're not sitting in a boardroom with someone thrashing out a deal?
Well, of course, it's hard because really negotiations should always be face-to-face. And telephone's really bad. Email's the worst thing because you don't really see what people think, see what people's demeanour is when you stated something. So it's really hard. Zoom tries to address that because at least you can see real people in a real room, but you still can't really see the whites of their eyes or their pupils dilating or the fact they're crossing their ankles means they're telling lies. So there's lots of things we still don't read by Zoom. And of course, people get fatigued by Zoom. The big issue on Zoom with negotiations from current research and my own personal work is that people try and cut to the chase far too early. On Zoom, the meetings are much more truncated than in a room because you're losing all the emotional, right brain, non-verbal communications. You're losing all the rapport-building conversations. It's down to the nitty-gritty too early. Negotiation terms, that's a big mistake. So since COVID, we've lost a lot of value on negotiations because we're cutting to the chase. And in the end, people buy from people they like. So, you know, this cutting to the chase doesn't really resonate with people so well. And also people renege more often negotiating on a screen because I don't shake hands. Even when I've said yes to you, I think when I leave, I've still got a choice.
That's interesting. That's a sign of the Zoom world, isn't it? That there's a power in a handshake, obviously, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. There is a power in a handshake. If you handshake, that's a deal. Very few British people would renege from that deal. On Zoom, I still think I've got a choice. A big thing with service industries, and the council are no exception to this, is when we come to that aspirational opening position, the highest aspirers get the best deals. So if you start at 4170, you're going to get a better deal than if you start at 3500. But the big mistake we make on setting the price and therefore negotiating is we use very round numbers when we're doing accountancy. We'll quote somebody £5,000 or £4,000 or £20,000. Or I got quoted a piece of work for doing an M&A deal for £60,000 the other day. I thought, and of course, when you think of it now, it's obvious, but it looks fabricated because it obviously is fabricated. No piece of human being work can possibly come to £5,000.
Yeah.
And the other thing about £5,000, it looks like you're going to move in thousands down to four, to three, maybe to two.
Good point.
So you should choose very non-round numbers, 4170, because 4170 looks like it's got some maths behind it. And also, it looks like you might move in 70s or 170. So the suggestion of the increments is much smaller. So once you've got that original number and you're confident about saying it, the big mistake in negotiation is as soon as people balk against it, they might say that's too high, they might say that's expensive, they might say they've got to quote £3,000, whatever it be. What we do, which is a real no-no for me, is give away a unilateral concession. So then the whole thing becomes disingenuous at best then, doesn't it? Well, what was the 4170? Why have you moved 1,170 in one fell swoop? And now people start to think, well, is it even worth three? And of course, the trust starts to dissipate. So the big thing on negotiation you've got to do once you quote your original price is you should only move for rational reasons, which are called tradables. You should only move if they give you something of value to you. Like if you said, well, give us a 2-year exclusive contract to do your accountancy work and add in audit, we can take pieces off for each one of those. If you went from 1 year to 2 years, we could take £100 off. If you paid us early, 50% deposit, we could take £70 off. If you extend the contract to 2 years and included audit, we could take another £100 off. So suddenly, I might charge you as an accountant £3,100, but now you're 2 years with me, you're exclusive with me, you're paying me deposit, you're doing other services with me. So it works for me.
Yeah.
So we've got to get into our heads that unilateral concessions are a real no-no, but everybody does it because we don't like rejection and we try and sweeten it with, well, we can throw this in. What's that all about? That was the value. That value never changes. So you should always try and trade it away, not give it away.
So these tradables are essentially a value for value exchange, aren't
they? They are. They're cards that exchange across the table. And you can pre-prepare these, Rob, because once you've got them for your own practice, they're there forever, really.
That's very good. And when we talk about objections, there have always been objections in the sales process, but because of the world of uncertainty we're currently in, budgets are always changing, priorities are changing, strategies are changing in a pandemic world. Are buyers bringing up more and more objections to avoid making decisions?
My big contention with objections is they never change. They never really change. The objections that we get in our business are always the same. Your price is too high. I like my present supplier. I don't know why I'm changing, really. They're always the same. But we never seem to sit down in the cold light of the office without the client and think, what's the answer when they say that? We never really think it through. All we do is we go into the next client meeting and get surprised again with exactly the same question. Oh my God, it's going to be too expensive again. So actually, the big advice on objections is collate them. There's only maybe 8 or 10. Collate them, sit in your office and work through, what do we say when they say that? You know, what's the answer? And you can get some really great answers. You know, if they said to you, we're happy with our current accountancy firm, then the answer is, well, we also value loyalty. So that sounds great to us. And most of our clients have been with us for 10 years, 95% of them never left. If you have that in your head as a script, it's very easy to handle objections. And that's what we don't do. During COVID, the big new objection is, we haven't got the cash, you know, we're a bit stymied for cash. And a lot of my clients, we've allowed them a moratorium in payment. We've allowed them to pay the invoices in October rather than last July, for instance.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a real mistake because we're all in the same circumstance. We've all got business going up and down. So we should have traded that away. So the big advice in a crisis situation we're in now is when a buyer rings you and said, we don't really want to pay you to your terms because we're in a bit of crisis, get something in return for that. We're happy to discuss that with you if we can discuss next year's contract with you right now.
Yeah.
So think about what the trades are when they're asking for these slightly extra things, Rob. Don't just give in because they're in a bit of a crisis. We all are, and we're not a bank.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Any tips for accountants on not charging for time?
Lots of practices, not just accountancy firms, lots of service practices, they charge by the hour or a day rate or a half day rate.
Yeah.
When you're thinking about all this added value, of course, it's not about hours. It's doing the right job to the nth degree, which is perfect and excellent, and the client will love. Mm. And actually, what the client also wants is knowing what they're going to pay for doing that great job. So it's much better to quote real money than it is to quote hours. If you start quoting hours, I'll start doing things to you like saying, well, how much are you an hour? And you'll say to me, well, we're £210 an hour for a senior professional. You think, so-and-so down there, they only charge one. And it's suddenly this match of hours. And you think, hang on, it's not about hours. Surely it's not about hours. A lot of firms, correct me, I think, will add up billable hours internally just to make sure the contribution that's coming in from the billings matches the hours we're spending on wages and salaries. Of course, that's true internally. But externally, it's much better just to charge for the job. This piece of work in M&A for you will cost you £29,710. And we'll do whatever it takes. And if it goes out of scope of it, we will have to maybe rediscuss it. But that's going to be the cost.
Yeah.
Well, how many hours are you going to take? We'll do what it takes.
Does charging correctly make invoicing easier then?
Yeah. You'd never invoice the negotiated amount. If I agree to pay you £3,000, the big mistake that I will do then is invoice £3,000. Because then I think, ooh, Rob's £3,000. And I go to you next year and say, well, it could be £2,900, couldn't it now, Rob? You think, this is eroding upon erosion. I'm not quite sure how we got even to three. And I probably reneged on some of the promises. So the best way to invoice is to invoice me £4,170 and show the line items, the discounted line items. Because you've done the 2-year contract, it's 70 off. Because you're telling 10 of your friends, it's 100 off. Because you've paid me 50% deposit, it's another 100 off. And that's why you're enjoying a price of 3.8.
Right.
So the document, the invoice, is the negotiation. And if I don't do all those things, as I promise, I owe you all that money. And next year, when I come and recontract with you and I glibly say, ooh, Rob, you're at 3,800, aren't you? You can say, no, we're at 4,170. Do you want to rediscuss another 2-year contract? Do you want to pay me early again like you did last time, etc.? So I make you recommit to all those things you're meant to be doing. So that's the really clever way to invoice. So the top line on your invoicing should always be the same. And then, of course, it handles the objection when they say, I know somebody who's using you down the road and you're only charging them £2,500. Yeah, because they're doing this and this and this and this. Do you want to discuss those things with me?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. It's not quite, no, it isn't quite the same.
That's very good.
But the top line on his invoice is the same as the top line on your invoice.
Yeah.
So it's clever.
Smart. Malcolm, this has been excellent. If people want to find out more about the great stuff that you do, what's a good way for them to reach you?
On the LinkedIn site's probably good. My email address is on there. I think my phone number's on there. If you type in Malcolm Smith Negotiation, you'll see some videos round about and you'll get my contact details.
And negotiation's not the only thing that you do, is it? You've got a lot of areas of expertise.
Lots of leadership, lots of delegation work. But negotiation's probably the biggest thing I've done in the last 20 years. It's the big topic that people like a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do lots of other stuff.
Well, would you leave our accounting listeners with one final piece of advice or encouragement in a COVID world to negotiate more confidently, more effectively, get better deals and feel good about it?
Yeah, get together on a Friday afternoon, discuss express what clients have said about you brilliantly over the last 2 weeks, which you never do, in a sunshine meeting. Feel good about yourself. Feel you're worth a new price. Put your pricing up from this afternoon or when you're listening to this and be confident with it. And if you have to come off it slightly, make sure there's a reason. And the best businesses in the world, their prices are going up.
Yeah.
Never drop your price just because we're in some sort of a crisis, because you'll be price merchants forever.
Yeah. Well, Malcolm Smith, I'm not going to thank you for your time today because that's not the way you've taught me to do it. So thank you so much for your insights and your passion today. That's been excellent.
My pleasure, Rob. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Hey, you know what I like? I like things that work. And I'm sure in your practice, you like things that work as well. So let's take a look at what works in a specific scenario here. My talking point for you, and here's what works this week, is from a business owner's perspective to you, the accountant, why do I need to change to your firm? You might want me to come on board. You might hope I come on board. I might want to change accountants, but why do I need to change to your firm? Why now? Why you? Why in this way? Why at your price? Okay, so here's the insight. We might understand the pressing need for a client to act fast on our proposals, but does the client understand the need to do the same? How often do you think about that? When you're trying to win a new piece of work, you go, oh, well, I get it. If they don't do this now and they'll miss that deadline and they'll miss that, and we could save them that much, and it's great. But are they as aware of that and its consequences as you are? Have you explained it well? Were they listening? Were you engaging enough for them to take a note of what you were saying? So let's think about this. Being able to save a client thousands in tax may or may not convince them to use you. It's a logical rather than an emotional argument that we're making here. Wouldn't it be better if you save thousands in tax? Yes, why don't you join us? Okay. Explaining how the redistribution of those savings brings them closer to realizing their professional and personal goals adds the emotional component to the commercial case for change that we're making. So we think, we'll save you thousands in tax. That should be enough for you to change. Well, yes, that's logically true. And therefore, I am interested. But it's going to be hard to break away from my current accountant. I'm loyal to my current accountant. I don't want to leave my current accountant. Oh, I feel bad about leaving my current accountant. So then we give them the personal self-interest. By making those tax savings, let's say that's the need. Let's say that's what we found is the major thing that we can provide this business. It brings them closer to their professional and personal goals. Now they're thinking, right, if I change to this firm of accountants, yes, it will be tough to leave where I am now, but I'm 20 steps closer than I was to achieving my ultimate goals. And now we're making a commercial case, a logical and emotional argument. Remember, logic makes us think, emotion makes us act. The less urgency there is for a business to engage you, the easier it will be for them to reject your proposal, possibly not even tell you that they have rejected your proposal, just not return your calls and wait for you to get the message that way. So that, again, the less urgency there is for a business to engage you, the easier it will be for them to reject your proposal and possibly not even tell you about it. So let's change that to the positive tense. The more urgency there is for a business to engage you, the more reasons you find for them to act fast, the harder it will be for them to reject your proposal. Yeah? So what's my recommendation as to what works? Here's what works. Think about the most common and pressing business issues that you've seen motivate businesses to join your firm or other firms in the past. That one again. What are the most common and pressing business issues that you've seen motivate businesses to join your firm or other firms in the past? Now, are any of those issues of that nature present in the businesses that you're currently talking to, that you're currently trying to win as clients? If they are, focus on those issues. And that is where we'll create the urgency. And that is what works when it comes to winning grade A new clients that give you a level of profitability that you aspire to. That's what works.
You're listening to the Accounting Influencers podcast, cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom
from the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world,
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Welcome to the show. I'm thrilled to have with me today an old friend, Alison Ball. Alison, hello to you.
Hi, Rob. It's so exciting to be on your show again.
It is great to have you on.
It's been a couple of years, hasn't it?
It has. And you're in a new place right now. We're going to talk about that today. But just for people that haven't come across you, would you just tell us a bit about your background and your areas of expertise?
So when I think about my career, really, it's all about just helping accountants and bookkeepers be more successful. I spent 15 years at Intuit in the accountant segment, ultimately building their global influencer strategy. And now I'm at Lissio, the marketing director there. And what's really cool about that is that I still get to help accountants and bookkeepers be more successful.
Yeah. Well, I was looking back, you've been on the show before.
Yeah.
And we talked about growth and branding strategies for top accounting firms. Now, since then, the world has turned on its head and things are changing. What kind of shape do you feel the accounting profession is in right now?
Oh my gosh. It's such a good profession to be in for many, many reasons. Whether you're an accountant, a bookkeeper, or tax only, or you're an advisor, you're a consultant, you're a software geek. There are so many roles that accountants and bookkeepers play now, and they're really vital. There's an interesting stat in the United States that in the year 2020, so in other words, the year we're sitting in, 75% of the CPAs that are members of the AICPA, and they have like a million plus, they're over the age of retirement.
Wow.
So they're 65 or older. So not only is there a huge need for the accountants and bookkeeper services and skills today, now, definitely in the US, there's going to be a shortage of accountants. So this is a great career to go into. And if you're already in the industry, then you know you're busy. Your services are in demand.
How do you feel accountants have coped with what's going on with the pandemic? Because we think of accountant CPAs as super smart, but not particularly agile. And there's a lot of change going on, a lot of disruption, unpredictability, uncertainty. You're in touch with a lot of accountants across North America. How do you feel they've responded?
Well, you know, it's been a challenging year. And for some, it's been really tough. So what we've seen in the US, Canada, actually, North America, we've seen entire industries, for example, hospitality, restaurants, bars, those types of things.
Yeah.
They've been really hit hard during the pandemic. So if you think about the accountants and bookkeepers that support them, their businesses have been affected both on a financial level and also on an emotional level. There's still great work for them to do. I wrote an article about all the things that accountants and bookkeepers could do to help their clients sell in different ways.
Okay.
So there's a creativity and there's a knowledge that accountants and bookkeepers have that they can use for helping their clients sell in different ways, uncover new revenue lines, make better use of their cash. But there's also a flip side to this. So there's other industries like, for example, delivery services, home grocery services, internet businesses that have actually seen a huge increase in business. So depending on the niche that the listeners support, they're either dealing with clients that are in crisis, in which case they've got to be very creative and help them sell in new ways, or they're dealing with clients whose businesses are booming, in which case they're trying to keep up. But assuming that a firm has more than one type of client that they serve, there are some common threads that emerge if you look at firms that are doing well versus firms that are struggling. So the thriving firms have taken full advantage of technology. Right? Everyone has had to provide client services in a remote fashion, right? We have not been able to go into our offices. And those firms that had everything on their office-based servers and that required staff to come in and work in the office, and they didn't have a way for them to work from home, those firms had to rapidly pivot. They would be in more pain, and they probably sorted it out now. And then if you compare to companies who offered cloud-based services before, well, their transition was much easier.
Mm.
And then I think there's one more thing that maybe differentiates successful firms from ones that are still be struggling, and that's the level of transparency that's built into their systems across their staff. And so when you're working remotely and you're not able to just sort of walk down the hall and talk to your staff person or stand up and talk over the cubicle, if you're relying on email as your primary way of communicating with clients, this is creating a lot of friction. It's a lot of wasted time because the information is siloed. You tend to have several people working on the same client, right? Somebody might handle the general ledger. Somebody might handle the bank rec. They might do different functions, right? And so the challenge is if you're working remotely, you can't walk to the office or cubicle next door and ask the other staff person where a document is or what the status of something is. So email right now is my biggest thing that I'm looking into as a challenge because I think it's just creating so much wasted time and friction, and it's not a great way to communicate with people.
Yeah, we know for sure that email for some time has been a real drain on productivity, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's certainly not good for the customer client experience.
It can be very detrimental because how do you find the signal in the noise, right?
Yeah.
So you got to think about clients. So pretend I'm an accounting firm and I'm getting all these emails and then I'm a client. And well, the client's getting all these emails too, right? And so there's three challenges really. the volume,
right,
you just get too much, right? There's this transparency across staff members. I've already answered that a little bit. But to achieve transparency, if you're using email, what do? You send more email, right? It's crazy. And then the other thing is findability and tracking.
Yeah.
And so a huge volume of email, just it makes it hard to find things. You can't easily track an email task, and it makes a terrible to-do list. So this is where actually some accounting firms really do have an edge, and they're using these better systems to communicate with clients. And it can create not only a better experience to the client, but also increase this transparency and trackability. And at Alicio, we've actually trademarked this term. We call it client experience 2.0.
Okay.
And the accounting firms that have adopted this method of working are very productive. Their clients are really happy. There's this feeling of, that they report. They're just very relaxed, and they just would never go back to the old way because most people don't think that they have a problem with email.
How has the remote world that we are in now with the pandemic changed the client experience?
I would like to say that for most firms, as long as you're a tech forward firm, if you're a traditional old school firm, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
what is your client?
Because accountants and CPAs will say to you, we like being face to face with our clients. We've got to eyeball them. We've got to shake their hand. We've got to be in their offices and live in their world.
Yeah.
But you can't do that right now, can you?
It's hard to do, but you and I are face to face right now.
Yeah.
And you know, you're in the UK and I'm in California. So I think if you embrace the technology and you keep in touch with your clients.
So if we're going to talk about client experience 2.0, just define for us client experience 1.0.
Yes. As I'm thinking this through, I think there's really three experiences.
Okay.
There's 1.0, right. 1.5.
Ah, okay. And you got 2.0. Out of that one nicely.
Yeah. Well, 1.0 is that kind of traditional firm that you think of. And a lot of the people that are going to be listening to your podcast today, Rob, worked in those firms and didn't like it.
Sure.
And there's very few ways for clients to get in touch with you if you're a 1.0 firm.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really think about it, there's very few ways. There's email, there's the phone, there's snail mail, and there's in person.
Okay.
Right? It's really very few ways. Those are the types of firms that tend to have strict deadlines, and you provide your documents and then you get your financials, you know, 60 days later. So that's 1.0. 1.5 is the tech forward firm that wants to solve the issues of 1.0. But what happened was is they went too far the other way. They adopted too many solutions. Now what's happening is clients have too many ways to get in touch. So you know that you have a problem when you've got to search through multiple places for where did that client send that doc, or you clients are texting you. And what's really funny is when a client wants to text you and send you a document, they take a photo of a document.
Yeah.
What do you do, right? What do you do with a photo of a document? I mean, really, like, think that through. How do you actually get that from your phone onto your computer? I think you email it to yourself and then you go and you print it out and then it's crazy, right? That's 1.5. And then 2.0 just uses a better system to control, to corral and organize and categorize and control the client communications so that the client has one place. And it's an app. We know the Alicio app does give client experience 2.0, and everything's in one place. It's secure. It's not a clunky portal that clients can't even log into. A 2.0 firm is choosing systems that are based on the client's experience.
So right? Is it obvious for a firm to know what level of client experience they're offering?
You can ask yourself a number of questions. So interestingly enough, I've got an ebook. It takes you through the 5 questions you should ask.
Okay.
But if you want to get in your mind what client experience 2.0 is in a different industry, compare it to an online banking app.
Yes.
How delightful is that?
They're super slick now, aren't they?
And it's been the quietest revolution ever. They've just been slowly doing it. But now you do it on your phone and you can even deposit a check. You can move money. You can pay bills. You can ask questions. You can talk to somebody via the app. They'll get back to you. Would you ever consider going back to the old days when you had to stand in line during business hours to do all these things? But the interesting thing is you still can go to the bank if you want to. You still can go to the ATM if you want to deposit a check that way, if you don't want to take a picture of it. So I think client experience 2.0 as offering the client a choice and making sure that all of those choices are delightful.
And Alicio are trying to be the app, that interface that gives almost that banking experience and that choice to the client?
Yeah, we're already there. It's there. It's done. So I interviewed with all these different companies completely remote.
Right.
I got my job completely remote. I have not met anyone in person in my company. Isn't that hilarious?
It is.
And I've now been working there 9 weeks.
Sign of the times though, Alison.
Crazy, huh?
So what do firms need to do to improve the experience the clients are getting? If they're not at 2.0 right now?
Basically, their there's a series of questions that you should ask to establish your client experience level, because there might be some things that you're doing really, really well, and then there's other things that you need to improve. So once you know the steps, and the good news is they're not difficult or expensive to do, then the technology can help. But really, overall, at a high level, it's a mindset combined with using great technology. And the mindset is we choose solutions at our firm that are built with the client in mind. In other words, we don't focus necessarily on the firm experience first. And that's a challenge that accounting firms do, is that all of the solutions that are shown to them are shown to them from the firm experience. So ideally, you want one that's good for both. And then I think to see if a solution is client friendly, there's a really good litmus test. Ask your mom or your grandmother to see if they could use it. And if they can, great, go for it. If they cannot, then you should dump it and find a better solution. Oh, and email. You've got to look into a better solution than email to communicate with a client. And I don't think it offers a good client or a good staff experience.
And do clients know what good experience is? Is it important that accounting firms educate their clients that they are getting a great experience?
Yeah, there's a number of questions that you can ask. We're creating for our accounting firm clients series of social ads that they can send out. Well, the first one is, do you love your accountant's portal? If not, call us. Those kinds of things, right? Does your client answer your questions within, you know, 10 minutes?
From experience of accounting clients though, Alison, it's a lot of clients can tell you what they don't want, but they can't always tell you what they do want. So in terms of great client service, they can't always articulate what that looks or feels like.
Yeah. So I think it helps to have a few examples of how easy it is to work with you. So the first thing that people should do, and this is a to-do regardless of your client experience, every accountant and bookkeeper should do this. The first thing is to redo your messaging on your website so that it's not about we. It should be about you. It should not be we. It should be, this is what you will get. This is what your issues are. We understand your challenges. We understand your business, right? You. Include some happy testimonials from clients. And then you can point out, you know, we have an amazing app that allows you to send documents to us, scan things on the go, and easily reach us when you need answers.
I've heard it described as a VTY vocabulary, value to you vocabulary. Yeah, we
there you go.
This, but the value to you is X, Y, and Z.
And you should frame things really in the value, because who wants to work with a firm that says, we are a 50-year-old respected firm, who blah, 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 blah. You're like, not me.
We are in an app world, aren't we? We're in a mobile world. But I imagine some listeners are feeling like, oh, app overload. I don't have time. I don't have the bandwidth. What advice would you give to them right now? They're liking what you're saying, but they're thinking, what, another app?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is there's apps and there's apps.
Okay.
And ask yourself, how long did it take you to learn your online banking app? It probably took you about a minute, didn't it? And the reason is because there was really good design. So when something is designed very well and is very intuitive, it's easy for you to use and it's easy for your clients to use. And so we don't find that we have a very long learning curve at all. We do spend time with the accountants and the bookkeepers who come on board to make sure that whatever data they want to bring over is brought over so that their client accounts are nice and healthy with the documents that they want their clients to see. But I think you have to ask yourself, what if you found some technology that was just super easy, easy to learn, easy to install, it was affordable, and it solved you headaches and all that wasted time with email. You're not hunting for documents. You've got transparency across teams. Clients are responding quickly to your requests instead of, you know, ignoring them, or worse, texting you an unusable photo. Like, how much time are you wasting? So I get it. I totally get it that there is a concern about an app overload. But if you can dump a bunch of things that aren't working for you and you have one that really does work and it delights your clients, it's a huge differentiator for you.
And it's a big competitive advantage, isn't it?
Huge. I think the CX 2.0 firms are going to dominate in 2021 and beyond, because the word's going to get out. We're just about to cross 100,000 users. Mm-hmm. And so it's starting to take on a life of its own, where clients are now saying, we came to you because you use Lizio. So this is really interesting. We predict that it's just going to be bigger and bigger.
And I had a stat recently, I think some research via Sage, that said that 41% of the world's population right now is under 25.
Exactly. Are they going to stand for outdated, clunky things? They were created in the 90s when these people weren't even alive.
Because they live on their phones. This is the world that they recognize. And these are going to be your future employees as a CPA firm. They're going to be your future clients. And that's the way the world is going. So, Alison, this is terrific. It sounds like you're changing the world with Lizio. You work with professional firms internationally?
Yeah, we have clients everywhere, actually. We do.
So if people want to have a conversation with you, find out about some of the great stuff you're doing, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Well, actually, if I can give you some links to put in the podcast, Rob.
Sure.
But it's really simple. The website's just Lizio. lisio.me. So Lisio is L-I-S-E-I-O.
Well, yeah. Alison, it's been great talking to you today. I want to finish with asking you to get your crystal ball out.
Yeah.
You've had a challenging year this year. Tougher times are to come. Loans that have been taken out are going to become repaid. Tax bills that have been deferred are going to become repayable. Double-digit recession, unemployment, everything else. What do you think is coming up in 2021? But more to the point, what excites you about what's coming up?
Yeah, so there's definitely all the challenges that I think you mentioned, Rob. But I just feel it in my bones that 2021 is going to be a time when we all pull together as humans. I feel like we're going to just understand the importance of truly supporting each other. We will have the vaccine. It's coming. New businesses are opening. I think it's just going to feel different. When we get into 2021, we're all going to come up and say, oh, okay, let's get on with it. I actually am really excited to see where we take things. It's like, it's our future. You know, human resiliency and kindness never fails to inspire me. We just have to make sure we remind people that we're human and we're resilient and we're kind.
And we do have, as humans, the ability to endure adversity and to come back, don't we?
Yeah, resiliency is the key. And I think if anybody listening today thinks that they've done a poor job of surviving the year, the fact that you are here and you're listening to this now, pat yourselves on the back. It means you're resilient.
Yeah.
It means you are someone who wakes up every day and says, okay, what's going on today?
Yeah.
What can I do today?
Well, Alison Ball of Lisio.me, it's been so good to talk to you today. You've done an amazing reinvention of yourself since you intuited, and it's clear that you're so passionate about where you're going right now. And God has a job for you to do, and you're doing that job, which is amazing. So thank you so much for your stories and your passion today.
Thank you, Rob. It's always really, really fun.
This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Hey Rob, quick history lesson for you. Did you know that the first tax records were found etched on ancient clay tablets?
Yeah, I'd not realised how old you are, Martin. And clay tablets are great though, but they're not exactly compatible with the latest digital tax innovations like Making Tax Digital, are they?
No, they're not. People weren't thinking future-proofing back then. But for our listeners, you know, if they're moving clients from similar old school methods to digital records, there is a famously friendly accounting software solution for the UK's smallest businesses.
It's funny you should mention that. I was a judge at the recent Digital Accountancy Forum Awards, and that was a collection, Martin, of the great and the good in the accounting world, all the top networks, associations, alliances, some of the biggest vendors there. They were big on awards as well. And it just made me think Free Agent is who you're talking about, isn't it? And they've won a lot of awards for their integrations and platforms about being really easy to use. And clients can use it on mobile or tablet.
And not just the clay kind. Rob, where do accountants and bookkeepers go who really want to accelerate their client's journey to the cloud? What would you recommend they do?
I'd recommend they go and get a free trial at freeagent.com/tablet. Because once you get into this, you experience it, you see how easy it is to use, you'll probably be a client for life.
Where did all the time go? Let's wrap up this week's Accounting Influencers Podcast Big Monday episode. And before we do, a quick thank you to our wonderful commercial partners, Irish Software Group, trusted by over 120,000 organizations from FTSE 100 companies to micro businesses with their software. And then Dex, smarter accounting software, more efficient workflows, 99% accurate data extraction, and confidence that your work is compliant. Practice Ignition, automated proposals, onboarding and payments in one convenient client engagement and commerce platform. Free Agent, award-winning accounting software for small businesses, voted number one in the UK. And Accountex, Europe's definitive event for accountancy, fintech and finance professionals. Thank you one and all for making this possible. So what did we have today? Well, we started with, in the news, Martin talking about Irish Software Group's play for global domination with the acquisition of US-based Accountants World. They're a long-time provider of accounting, payroll software, cloud-based services to accountants, big players in the US, and it shows Irish's intention to capture more of the US market. Then Malcolm Smith shared with us lots of great negotiating and pricing tips for accountants and making them less commoditized with their language, with what they offer, and expanding into core advisory and consulting services as they make that core instead of the compliance. Back to Martin in the Here's What Works section. He had some great advice for clients that you want to have with you that are currently with your competition. So what would make them switch from your competitors to you? And when you know this, you also
know what stopped them from switching back to your rivals, so you maintain them. And then finally, Alison Ball, ever energetic, dynamic, passionate, formerly of Intuit. She talks about client experience 1.0, 1.5 and 2.0 for accounting firms. She knows what it takes to provide a great accounting client experience, and she shared with you some of her top tips on upgrading what you do for your clients, both with your mindset and with your process. So thanks for listening to the show. We hope you got lots of great stuff out of it. Remember to check out our Saturday bonus. That's where we continue with our popular series from the client's perspective of why they didn't buy. If you've got a business development or growth or new business angle to your accounting role, you need to know what goes on in the client's or prospect's mind when you go and see them to sell your services, and you feel that they don't really need it enough. They don't show enough of an itch that you can scratch. Martin has all the answers for you, and he'll share them on the Saturday bonus. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.